Earners, what's up? Look, the holiday season is supposed to be about joy and celebration, but let's be real. Finances could take a serious hit this time of year. Have you ever found yourself dipping into your savings or even adding to your credit card debt just to cover some holiday expenses? I know I've been there, and those months of catching up afterward, they're not fun. But what if you could approach this holiday season differently, without the stress? That's where Chime comes in. With a Chime checking account, you get features designed to help you stay in control of your money, like no monthly or maintenance fees, fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe, and my personal favorite, getting paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit. Think about it. No surprise fees draining your account and the flexibility to handle those holiday expenses when they pop up. Let me tell you about SpotMe. I remember a time when an overdraft fee hit me just because my timing was off with my paycheck. It was frustrating and unnecessary. With Chime, you don't have to deal with that. SpotMe lets you overdraft up to $200 without fees, and your next deposit just covers the balance. And here's something unique. Chime is all about community. You can even get a boost from a friend to temporarily increase your SpotMe limit. And when you help a friend out, they can boost you back. It's a real give and take that makes managing your finances feel a little more supportive. Millions of Chime members are making financial progress every day. To date, Chime has spotted members over 32 billion in transactions through SpotMe. And with access to over 50,000 fee-free ATMs, you can take care of your money anytime, anywhere. So enjoy the holidays while keeping your financial goals on track with Chime. Open your account in just 2 minutes at chime.com/earn. That's chime.com/earn. Chime. Feels like progress. Banking services and debt card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Direct deposit timing depends on submission of payment file. Boosts are available to eligible Chime members enrolled in SpotMe and are subject to monthly limit. Fees apply at out-of-network ATMs and for OTC withdrawals.
You made it through all the starts and stops of your tech business. And when you're with Amex Business Platinum, you can count on a network of benefits to keep going, including access to over $1,000 in business and travel value annually. And thanks to 5x membership rewards points on flights and prepaid hotels booked on AmexTravel.com, you and your plugged-in engineers can get rewarded for working in the cloud. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at AmericanExpress.com/AmexBusiness.
Earners, what's going on? Listen, EYLU is relaunching, revamping, retooling. That's right. We're creating a new educational experience that's more expansive. Shadi, tell them what we got.
Yes, 2023. We got a lot in store, a lot planned for you guys. So you know that EYLU already includes monthly financial planning calls with me, book club calls with Troy, real estate calls with MG the Mortgage Guy, access to the home buying blueprint, volume one and volume two. Part of the revamp will include 27 local chapters from across the United States, live interactive teaching, hands-on, not just pre-recorded videos, plus 15 brand new curriculums.
The biggest just got bigger.
Head over to EYLUniversity.com. That's EYLUniversity.com. See you there.
All right, guys, welcome back. EYL, we got a special edition, Legends Only. This is a Legends edition.
Yes, thanks. For sure.
Whenever we get a chance to talk to, you know, the hip-hop legends, is always fun for us because before anything, we was fans of music. We still are fans of music.
1,000%.
And just culture. So, you know, people that have helped shape it, it's always great for us to have conversations with them. So we have Rasheed, better known as Common.
Yeah,
formerly known as Common Sense.
yes. Also known as.
Yeah, for sure.
It's dope that we grew up in the era and we got to watch our artists mature and still have relevancy.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the early days of hip hop, there wasn't an act, right? Like, it felt like this couldn't grow old. It was a young man's sport. Yeah. I even heard somebody saying that the other day, it's a young man's sport. I'm like, that's true, but these guys that were young have now grown and we've grown with them. So I think this is a dope conversation that we're going to have.
Yeah, no, for sure, man. Thank y'all, too, for having me up here, man.
I appreciate it.
Respect and love what y'all doing.
Thank you.
For sure. And I want to say, I definitely, creating, when I first started, like, making music, didn't think I could grow into my 30s, 40s. I'm 52 now. Wow. And be creating music, like, where it still feel fresh, where it's, I'm still, like, a weird, not me and with Pete Rock and I on this album, but just gaining new audience. We didn't have those examples at the beginning because mm-hmm. hip-hop was so young.
Right, right.
But when we think about it being a, it is a young man's sport, young woman's sport, but it also is, like, because it's music, it has a timelessness to it. Like, music doesn't really, when you think about music, it don't really denote an age or even a color, man. Like, cause some of the songs I've enjoyed most, man, it's all walks of life just loving it. It could be Michael Jackson's Off the Wall, or it could be Kendrick Lamar, Not Like Us, you know, and I see different, like, age, different people from different age groups still enjoying all that music. So I feel like music, when it's made in its purest way and it really has a soul to it and it's special, it doesn't have that that limit on it. It can grow and be timeless. And for me as an artist, I've been just striving to grow. Yeah.
Well, how have you been? So you're one of the few artists that have been able to maintain relevancy for a long period of time in hip hop, right? Unfortunately, a lot of artists don't have that longevity.
Yeah.
And you've done it with different verticals, acting and stuff like that. So what's your key to be able to maintain relevance and to reinvent yourself decade after decade?
I mean, I would like to think I had a formula, but I really didn't have a formula. I think it was just a faith. It's about the love for the art forms. It was about staying humble and being like, man, I can learn. I got to learn. I got to seek to get better. So even when I had those victories, like an album like B, I didn't just sit back and be like, okay, I made it. You know, it's like, how can I get better? And as you mentioned, like, the vertical of acting was very important to me. And, you know, the relevancy that people see, some of that is just because of acting or because of the activism. Mm. Because it's not like every album I put out since 92 when I first put out my first album, it's not like everyone is connected with people. And I fortunately understand the ups and downs of that too, and can still stay with my eyes on the prize as far as striving to grow as an artist. But getting into acting, doing different things, like songs being in films, like the song with John Legend and I, that, you know, we got on the Oscar stage. That was something I dreamed of doing as an actor, but didn't know I would do it as a musician.
Selma,
the song Glory.
Yeah.
So that being said, I think the key that I could say most is just, man, just being in tune with the Most High and following, you know, your consciousness, your gut feeling of who you are. At times you move like musically, at times I do different shit, man. Like, I'll be like going out there, venturing off, and I don't be like, okay, just because people want to hear me do this boom bap hip hop, I'm just gonna do it. No, if I'm in this space or wanting to do some eclectic, eccentric stuff, I'm gonna do it. And it might, you know, it might not win then, but it could win later. And I think that's just about, really, I mean, it sounds so trite, but staying true to who you are and having a faith and being humble is the only things I can look at that have kept me in this music business, just this business.
You came in 92. I mean, this is the, what do you like to call this, the golden age, the golden era of hip hop. The breakthrough song is I Used to Love Her.
Yeah.
I mean, they made movies around this, right? Brown Sugar, the movie, is based off the premise of I Used to Love Her.
Yes.
I wonder now, as you're creating, because I want to talk about the selection of from No ID to Ye to Pete Rock. We'll get into that.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts now about him? Like, do you still love her in the same way that you said in 92?
Man, I really, like, kind of re-fell in love with hip-hop within the past, like, few years. Like, I always loved it, but now I feel like it's an energy out there in the zeitgeist where, man, people are appreciating and open to and wanting, like, hip-hop that has lyrical content, like bars, like soulful music that could be, it could be a young, fresh artist giving you something soulful with new sounds, but it's soulful and authentic. And I just feel like I love it because I'm realizing, seeing that celebration for the 50th year did something for me. Mm-hmm. It made me see how much people will always love this music. And you think that the audience, like for me, I thought that the audience was gone for a certain sound of the music, but they still there. And now we know, like, man, you can have music, you can have, you know, everybody from Future to Nas still putting out music, and you can enjoy it. And different, man, we've been touring right now, and sometimes I look in the crowd and it's like people 23 years old. I'm like, damn, I'm really their father. but they enjoying the music and they like know the words to the new album. And I'm like, man, it just shows me that it can be no boundaries when you just put out that oomph, that stuff that got it to, you know, like, man, and that don't happen all the time. It's just things align at the right time, and you know, and I'm saying that to say my passion and love for hip hop is strong, and I was able to connect with Pete Rock, who was the right person for me to create that music with, and it still feels fresh and new, but has the spirit of what we always loved. But you could have asked me 5 years ago, I might not have been wanting that boom bap sound. Mm. So I do have that love, and I don't think that love will ever go anywhere. You know, like any relationship, sometimes you need something else a little bit. You want to try, you know, like you try, you know, I ain't saying you cheat.
Allegedly. Allegedly. Or you just figure out how to work things out, communicate with each other better.
Let me be clear. I'm saying in a relationship, like you gotta grow and expand, and like y'all interests, you and your partner's interests, y'all stay growing and evolving and, you know, trying new things.
And remain aligned.
Thank you. Yeah. Trying to guide me in the right direction.
So he still loves her.
Yeah, I still love her. That's it. I love her.
So, like, talking about Pete Rock, right, legendary producer that comes out around the same time as you come out, and you guys have a unique perspective because you both of you have been on major labels. Now you're doing it the independent way. You've seen it transition from physical CDs to streaming. So from a business aspect, what's it like now in 2024 as opposed to 1994? What have you learned? What are some challenges now as far as on the independent side as opposed to just major label?
Well, business-wise, man, I feel like the music industry was just making a lot more money when we initially were coming out. Maybe not right at the beginning when Pete Rock came out 90, 91. I came out 92, same time. Around that 94, 95, budget started going up. Like my first videos was like $20,000, $30,000. You know, one of my, I was only able to spend $5,000 on a video. But then I can remember spending $200,000 on a video, $400,000, but it was denoting that because the record sales were coming in and record labels were just making money. Once obviously streaming came and that partnership didn't work out, like, you know, because obviously I heard Apple approach a lot of the labels, like, Let's do this together. But the labels were like, nah, we good. This is our thing. Mm-hmm. And Apple came and manifested that business. And then it made the labels have to pivot and move and shift and find. So I find it now, the pot is not as big. That's why, you know, you do, to me, have to go out and establish other things revolving around that. I look at it like, and I started figuring this out early on, was like, man, I'm invest in my career because that's investing in my business. Mm-hmm. You know, so I was like, okay, if I'm gonna spend these money on rehearsals, because rehearsals actually will get me with a great performance, I will be able to perform for the rest of my life if I like impact with these shows, doing great performances, or I'll investing in my own self. Like just, I'm a hire the chef, so that I can take care of myself. So when I am in an older age, I can be doing all the things I need to do, whether it's stunts in a movie or jumping around on stage. Those investments, I think, for me, the business changed where we used to depend on the labels to make those investments. And now, as our own entrepreneurs and visionaries, we like, oh, we gotta.
But that's interesting because LeBron is notorious that he puts $1 million a year into his body, from his trainer to his chef. I saw somebody running back.
Derrick Henry?
Yeah.
$250,000.
$250,000 and he crazy vegan alkaline type diet. But I never really looked at it from that perspective as far as like a performer, an artist. But I guess it's the same thing, right? You got to be able to breathe correctly. Yeah. You got to be able to, so... That's interesting that you look, because like athletes, I heard it from the athletic standpoint, but I never heard about it like an artist looking at it like, I'm gonna pay for a chef, I'm gonna pay for this coach, I'm gonna do this so I can have more longevity.
Oh man, it's like, yo, that, like, I understand, you know, it seemed like a no-brainer for an athlete to be like, let me invest in my physical well-being, because they use their bodies all the way. But so do artists, really. Like, and that's the thing that we don't think about sometimes, because we came up, you know, I'm drinking this if we party and kick it, and I still could go on stage and rock. But at a certain point, you start looking sloppy, and you don't have as much like just like focus, and you don't have like the energy. And I think what I've learned, and I learned it early on, it was just thank God for some of the eclectic, you know, eccentric people, or just, you know, people I met when I moved to New York, because I was already on my path, but they were showing me like, yo, eating this stuff, taking some of this alkaline, getting some of these green drinks. Well, that we was just doing it just to be healthier. But little did I know it would affect my well-being in my business too. Meaning like, I think clearer. I got as much energy. You could put me up. I was just racing against some 22-year-olds. I mean, I lost to three of them. But I was like, you know, like my point is like to be able to do and function and move around and do all those things at a high level, you got to invest in your body, yourself, and in the well-being. It also affects your emotional well-being. So I kind of got that through just the process of me picking up information, being around people who were in tune with that, and just seeing it for myself. And yeah, man, I feel like when I think about the music industry, I really wish we would have had more health and wellness, like attention given, because a lot of people have went and passed on just because of those things and not having health.
It's the opposite. Yeah. It's promoted drugs, alcohol, staying out late. Yeah. It's all,
Yeah, but you don't even come to that. Because this is an important part of your life. Mom was a teacher.
Yes.
Right, so the education piece is there. And like I said, I read in the book, the summer vacations that were instrumental in developing. But moving to New York, the role that played, because at the time, and people, they kind of can't understand it now because they look at Chicago and they think, oh, wait, that's where Lil Durk's from.
Yeah.
Or that's where Chief Keef's from. Yeah. And they're like, oh, yo, Nah Ye's from there.
Yeah.
But like when you're coming up, it's really like it's you. And maybe Twister. And then Crucial Conflict is like a couple of years after that, but it's not, this isn't like a well-respected place for hip-hop music. Mm-hmm. So coming to New York, the role that had, because I remember the line, and nobody argues you about it. You're like, I'm the Chi-Town's Nas.
Yeah.
And I'm like, maybe he is. Right? Talk about the role that coming to New York and the influence, obviously getting around Native Tongue a little bit, what that had on you.
Yeah, well, it was, first of all, man, I'm like super grateful that I was just born and raised in Chicago, because it gave me something that I carry with me, that I think that's the authenticity and a love, and just a down to earthness that I love. But New York is a mecca for bringing all these different people together, like bringing all different cultures. I think when you're from New York and you live it, you don't even see it from how great of a city it is, because there's not many cities that can go that you can go to in the world and have this mixture of cultures, and it really blends naturally overall. You know what I'm saying? Like, so my foundation, it was hard being in Chicago and trying to get even signed or get heard. And once that happened, it was me and Twista. Shout out to Twista. And then, like you said, Crucial Conflict, those guys got out there. But I still wasn't, like, planted in the industry. I could remember going into my third album, like, man, how am I going to make a career of this? Because I wasn't making a lot of money. I was, as Andre 3000 said, living check to check. You know, if you don't move your feet, then
I don't eat.
So we like
neck, so we neck and neck.
So I was in that space. And I just, people that I was, like when I would come to New York, I was like connecting with people, and with certain things would happen. Like when De La reached out to me, De La Soul reached out to me and said, be on this album. That was a game changer for me, be on this song. That was the first time I went to London.
The Business.
The Business on the Stakes Is High album.
Yeah.
And funny story, they wanted Biz on that song, but he didn't show up or whatever. So they eventually called me, and I was super geeked. And all my friends, it just was a big moment for me. Anyway, like being accepted and being out here on the New York scene, I started running into different people. And I was like, it's almost like it's being in an industry and going to the center of that industry. And like, I'm in the music industry, but me deciding to move to New York was like, okay, now I might run into Primo, so that's how I can work with Primo. Or when somebody need me on this track, I'm around, like I'm here, you know. And you just never know the connections, but it's being in that hub of where the music was coming from, most of the music in the music industry. So moving to New York gave me that. Mm-hmm. And it also did open my mind up to different aspects of life. But I was building on that in Chicago, and Chicago, it gave me a great foundation. I wouldn't change the course of it at all.
Which is the record that you start to say, all right, this is turnaround for me. Is it The Light, or is there one before that that's, all right, here's a commercial success that everybody in the quote-unquote industry is looking for me to have?
Well, okay. The first step, I would say, was Resurrection album, which, because had I Used to Love Her on it.
Right.
And the reason why I say that is because when I released my first album, it wasn't any response, really. It was like, oh, okay, yeah, whatever. And then when I released I Used to Love Her, I remember Biggie doing one of those promos for me, being like, yo, I wish this kid was from Brooklyn. Or I remember seeing Nas, and he was like, keep doing your thing. And so I started like realizing that some of the people who didn't probably pay attention to my music before were starting to, and it was those greats. And I was like, oh. The Game Changer album was like Water for Chocolate because of the song The Light. And the reason I seen the difference in that was before I was like a well-known hip-hop artist, right? Like on a hip-hop scene.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly underground. It wasn't like I was getting radio play. The Light was the first song I was like starting to, I got radio play, and I was doing the summer jams, and it was the first time I saw people outside of hip hop culture singing one of my songs, like, or like even knowing who I am or caring about who I am. Like, I remember doing a performance and seeing like young black girls singing The Light, and I was like, wow. They never was singing any of the other music. So I saw the difference. I saw like me doing top 40 shows at that time. And like, and to this day, that's one of the songs that when I perform, people know it the most, you know? So that was the game changer. And then I think B was the one that it elevated it even higher.
Well, B, that's when you connect with Ye on a musical level, right?
Yeah.
When you meet him, you knew him before that?
Yeah, I knew Ye, and I would say like 96, 95, somewhere around there.
Oh, back then?
Yeah, yeah. He was just out of college. He might have been in college, but No ID, who's my producer for those first three albums, him and Twilight Tone, but No ID was one of the main producers and one of my best friends. his mother and Kanye's mother, Dr. Donda West, God bless her soul, they taught together. They were both educators, and she brought Kanye over to meet No ID, and Ye was making beats, and he was always making beats, and his beats was dope, but it was like No ID was the master at that point, so I was always like, yeah, this is good, but No ID got this. And then Ye would like, he would come to my basement sometimes and like battle, like he want, you know, because I was one of the Chicago dudes out at that time.
It's
like,
nicest.
So he like, yo, he was battling me, and he could rhyme good, so it was like, it was just that we was cultivating ourselves. And I never took any, I never got any beats from him at that time. For me, I was like, I needed them drums to snap, and he was getting there. But then, you know, eventually we reconnected because he had moved out to New York and was living out here. And I started seeing him, and he was like, yo, let's, he's like, I got to get you on my album. I got everybody. He was like, yo, I said, of course, I'm with it. And we just, I got on his song, Get 'Em High.
Yeah.
And we were, at the time, we had already started, we kind of like started connecting on beats. Cause I, it's funny, one of the first beats I got from Ye, he was already excited to make some beats for me, but he was in a studio session for somebody else making a beat. And he told me to come by, and I came in, and I was like, what's that? What's that? He was like, oh man, that's this beat I just made. He was like, man, take this beat and leave. Like he gave you, like basically, he
figure
like,
out what to do with this.
Yeah, like get this beat. If you want it, take this. And then I guess for that artist, he did something else for them. But I came in and got that beat, and that turned out to be the food. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So how you about to ask a question?
I'm just reliving the sound of the food on some of my favorite tracks on there. The sound was incredible. Like this is a double question, right?
Mm-hmm.
So at this time, you're 12 years into the career.
Yeah.
But this album, critically acclaimed from, you know, all other outlets, but it's Five Mics.
Yeah.
This is like at the end of when Five Mics was meaning something, but you got the Five Mics. And I'm sure for at that time that had to mean something. But I also want to talk about the visuals for the project too.
Yeah.
Because not only did the sound match it, but like the videos that were coming from it were incredible, right? So the corner, right? You had Taraji starring, right? Like, and it was like everything was coming together at that time. What was that moment like? Obviously getting that acclaim with the Five Mics, but then like, yo, we have to match the sound with the visual.
Man, Five Mics meant a whole lot. Like what I was telling, I was telling somebody who used to work at The Source, man, we literally would be making our albums like, man, I want to get Five Mics. That's something when you like creating an album to get a rating. It was nothing else that like, no other like publications or things where we thinking like, man, I got to get 4 stars, 5 stars in Rolling Stone or this and that. It was like, I want Five Mics in The Source. Or once Double XL, I want the
Double XL. Yep.
Yeah. So getting that recognition was like, man, it meant a whole lot to me because it's just as a coming from the culture of hip hop, that was like a gold medal. That was like an NBA championship for us.
See, they can't argue classic with you anymore.
The classic, and your goal is to make a classic, man. No matter what, like even for me at that time, obviously beyond record sales, I wanted a classic album. So getting that recognition, and it was something, man, I be telling this story when I speak at colleges and stuff. It was something for me growing wise as a human being with that album, because I was watching Ye at that time while we were making B. We were both creating, you know, he was pretty much done with College Dropout, but I watched his faith in himself and his confidence and was like, he would be like, yo, listen to, it was College Dropout, we'd be doing listening session, and he'd be like, listen to this, this is amazing, this is incredible, like presenting this music with confidence. And, you know, just the way I was raised, I wasn't taught to do that. And I felt like doing the album B was the first time I kind of declared my music to be great and classic and really believed it. And it got classic ratings. I mean, it was the music itself, but the fact that I was able to say it and believe in it and do it, you know, with like the confidence of a Muhammad Ali, not trying to make some arrogant and being like, I'm better than you. It's just like, yo, check this out. This is dope. This is incredible. So that was a a stepping stone for me. So that meant something, the 5 mics and all that. Just kind of, it kind of solidified, yo, man, you got to believe in yourself. You got to speak. And then, you know, what was the second part of the question? Because I forgot.
The videos. Oh, they're all on point.
The videos was, I got to say, I always used to want to be dope visually, but wanting to and being able to execute is two different things. I think having Kanye really helped from the standpoint of he was going to make sure I had the budget I needed, make sure we got to the right director. Because I was on good music, he wasn't accepting nothing less than high level visuals, and which pushed me. And as soon as we made the corner, as soon as he made that, like he heard that rap, he said, "Man, we gotta do this video in Chicago. Man, it's black and white. It's gonna be cold outside, and we just in Chicago in the hood, bro." And man, he directed that video. We was in Chicago. It was one of the coldest days I ever felt in Chicago.
It looked like
I was sick already. But I was so high off the energy of what we was doing. I just was able to get through it. But it was those visions that I got to say, yay, and if it wasn't him directing, he would try to make sure we had the right director. And then by the time we got to that video Testify with Taraji and Wood Harris and Steve Harris, all these great actors, it was like I knew, because I was studying acting, that I could do a story and make it a film. Like we wanted that to be a short film.
Awesome.
And Anthony Mandler directed that.
He was fire.
So how did you actually transition from being a rapper into an actor? Like who actually gave you a first start, and how did that?
Well, that I felt that at one point, as we talked about earlier, sometimes you know when you create music, sometimes you got that I can't wait to do the next song, and then sometimes you're like, okay, I ain't in the spirit to create this music right now.
Mm.
When I found myself in those places, I said it got to be something else artistically out there for me. Like I just knew I had to find another expression. This was like late 90s. I was always in the films, going to plays. I loved it, but I never knew I could do it. Because when I first did it when I was a kid, my mother saw my play and she kept talking how good my homie was. You know, your mother, you think your mother gonna say, good job, son. But she was like, yo, Derek was incredible in that joint. Like, I was like, okay, well.
I said, yeah, I saw you up there too.
I was like, okay. Well, so I ended up not even thinking about it. And plus, like, at the time, it wasn't like, I ain't gonna put it all on that, but a lot of it was like, I'm into this hip hop thing. And so I wasn't thinking about pursuing it for myself. But somewhere in that late 90s period, I was like, man, I want to try acting. I really want to, because I always loved it and loved watching movies and loved theater. And I went to acting class. And the first acting class I went to, I was like, man, this is incredible. Like, I feel that love, like, that I felt. It's not the same exact as music, but it's got just as much love for the art form when I started it. So I was like, man, I got to just keep going to class. So I was going to class. I would be on tour. Every time I would come back, I was just going to classes. Then the classes started going to, okay, go do auditions. I was going to auditions, getting turned down. And ironically enough, when we were editing the video for Testify, and I had did an audition for this movie called Smoking Aces.
That was
my first movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, it was the first time I got a call back. And I remember going into the editing room. I just come from the audition. I still had on my suit because I was playing this character that had, you know, was like a bodyguard, but he was sharp. So I went into that editing room, still geeked, like, yo. And I got a call back. And then it happened where I got a second call back. And that's when I got the second call back, which was like, you got the job. And I had to literally, I was crying when I got that job. I called my mother like, yo, I got a movie. And it was, but I had to hang up that phone with all that joy and then going to the the hotel room next door and tell Kanye I couldn't go on this tour. Mm. Like I booked, they had promoted me and everything.
What tour was it?
It was with him, Keisha Cole. It's probably around 2005 or six. I don't remember the name of it. It had to be 2005 because that's when we started.
Mm. Graduations. Maybe it's the Glow in the Dark.
Yeah, it might. No, I think it was before Glow in the Dark, but it was. It was a real crazy dynamic because Ye definitely was like, man, it's all good, bro. Like, he kind of was supporting me going into my dream. And though it was some business aspects that had to be maneuvered that my manager at the time, Derek, made happen, that was my step into acting. Mm. And it was good to get that love and support from, like, somebody who I'm like, man, we in this partnership doing music and things. But he was like, man, go pursue that. If that's your dream, go do it.
Yeah. So I remember that, the announcement when you got Smoking Aces, because that leads to Just Right.
Yeah.
Which is now, you're not just like a role, like you're the lead.
That's the lead.
You and the queen,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
And obviously Cube had done it at the time. Will had done it. Obviously Queen Latifah had done it. Pac, obviously. And now you're the guy that's having a lead role in a movie. You cried the first time. What was that reception like when you got the call to say, like, nah, you're going to be the lead actor in this movie now?
Man, that's one of them calls where you, as soon as you get the call, you start going into like training mode. Meaning I was super excited because Queen Latifah is a very talented actress and she just, people love her and people show up for her movies. And for me, it was, wow, I'm about to be a leading man in a film. And I hadn't had that opportunity. I played all these supporting roles. So I felt the pressure. To be honest, my first days of filming, I wasn't doing good. Mm. And they had talks behind the cameras about, like, are we gonna keep this dude on for this? And I remember it was a scene that Queen Latifah and our characters had sitting in this jazz club. And it just was something about the scene that felt good to me. It was natural. We didn't even have a lot of dialogue. And from that moment, the director was like, and the producer's like, that's all we need. Just do that. What I didn't know at that time was, like, in a romantic comedy, people are mostly themselves in a romantic comedy. Right? Like, they bring in more the essence of just them. It's not like you disappear in a character in a romantic comedy, mm-hmm, most of the time. Like, you know, when you see Heath Ledger in the Joker, as the Joker, God bless his soul, he is the Joker. But when you see, like, Matthew McConaughey in a romantic comedy, or, you know, even like what Queen Latifah did before, it's like, it's some of the elements of herself. When she doing Set It Off, that's a different thing. You understand what I'm saying? Y'all understand? Like, you got to go deeper,
yeah,
in those dramatic roles or those characters where you creating a whole character. Romantic comedy, they want you to bring more of your essence, be light. I didn't know that. And I was trying to do something else in the first days. And then eventually I just had to let go and be like, okay, cool. Because one of my favorite things about acting is becoming somebody else in different ways, you know, like, mm-hmm, like, and I love when I'm watching a movie, when somebody's watching a movie that I'm in and knows me, and they say, man, I ain't even see Rashid in that. I ain't even see you in that. I saw the Sir Ivy or Cassian from, you know, from John Wick 2. I see Robert Sims. That's a compliment, mm-hmm, to me.
Well, how do you, because from
can you hoop though?
Can I hoop? Yeah,
you can play ball.
Yeah, I can hoop because
that's part of the role.
That was part of the role. That was part of the role. And I made sure that my stunt double didn't get no ticket. Yeah, I was like, you know, there was no way I was going to go back home to Chicago and they see a stunt double in the movie where I'm playing a basketball
game. Yeah, that's crazy. The stunt double for basketball. But from an actor standpoint, like, I've heard actors say, like, they struggled with getting out of character, like when you go that far into character. Have you ever been in that vibe where, God, who was it? Somebody said it took like 6 months for them to actually get out of the character, and it actually caused a lot of problems in their life.
Yeah, I think Denzel might have said
that. Yeah, I think Denzel said that.
I definitely have had times where, you know, it took me time to get out of the character, mostly while I'm filming, meaning like I come home with some of that energy, and it's times where I've been like, I've had heavy days of filming where like the scenes is heavy, and on the ride home, I just broke down. Cause like I played on a show called Hell on Wheels when my character was getting hung. It was like taking place in the Reconstruction era, where it's like the building of the Continental Railroad. And man, my character was getting hung. And man, I could not like, man, that feeling. And just thinking about all of our ancestors that had went through that. Man, when I got in that van on the way home, I was just like, couldn't hold it, man. And you know, it comes out in different ways too, like where you playing that killer and you shooting somebody all day. Like, I remember just coming home one day and being like, I gotta go watch a dumb movie, just a movie that don't got no, well, I ain't got to think about nothing. Because I just was feeling heavy. You holding that gun, shooting somebody, blah, blah, blah. Them guns is real powerful. Like, them ain't, it's just, they just don't have gunpowder in the bullet, but you still getting the same charge, so.
When you're with Amex Business Platinum, you have the card that helps you do more of what you love. Like a flexible spending limit that adapts with your business. And with 5x membership rewards points on flights and prepaid hotels booked on AmexTravel.com, going the extra mile for your business is even more rewarding. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Not all purchases will be approved. Terms apply. Learn more at AmericanExpress.com/AmexBusiness.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit 2, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you're a maintenance supervisor for a commercial property, you've had to deal with everything from leaky faucets to flickering light bulbs. But nothing's worse than that ancient boiler that's lived in the building since the day it was built, 50 years ago. It's enough to make anyone lose their cool. That's where Grainger comes in. With industrial-grade products and dependable fast delivery, Grainger can help with any challenge, from worn-out components to everyday necessities. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know, it makes you have compassion towards people who dealing with that type of stuff all the time.
This is interesting because this speaks to a couple of pieces. Obviously, the mental health side of it, right? Because, yeah, you're crying and that's just you. But number one, who do you call? Who did you call during those times? And was there somebody in the industry that was a confidant, right? Like I said, those, the Cubes of the world, they're from hip hop, but they're in Hollywood. Like, are those people that you were able to call and reach out to during these times for advice?
Well, I mean,
I still had an issue with Cube then, right?
Not him specifically.
We're
going to get to that.
We're
going to get to that.
Yeah, by then we had resolved it. By the time I was acting, we had resolved that. But a lot of times it would be cast members. Like, even on the film American Gangster, I didn't have no real, like I wouldn't, like going through it or whatever, but Denzel was like guiding and helping and giving me gems, like, and giving us gems. And I really respected that. The fact, you know,
classic
sitting
movie.
Up there, classic. Like, this is Denzel.
This guy's T.I.'s pops.
Yeah, I was like that. which was crazy. Hey, I was like, I worked so hard to get that role because I tried out for the role that Idris had and they liked me, but they was like, no. Then I tried out for another role and they like, you too young. And I went and made another audition tape. And the casting director was like, man, you dope and you passionate. We just gonna cast you as this. T.I.'s father. And I was like, okay, I'll take it. I'm 8 years older than him, but hey, I could do it as an actor. It's funny because, you know, for a long time, T.I. would see me and be like, Pops. Like, oh, man, this has gone too far. But, you know, I was grateful that Denzel was sharing information with us. That's what you want, like, from somebody who's that gifted and, you know, just a legend, a guru in it, to give you, you know, that wisdom. And Ruby Dee was on that set too. Mm-hmm. I was just watching her and just being like, man, God bless her soul. She was a master. I was like, I got that role and I literally only had about 4 lines in the movie, but I knew I would be throughout the movie, like learning, and I was gonna be on set with Denzel Washington and Ruby Dee. And it was like some of the great lessons I had. As far as those times when I was going through stuff, only mostly the actors around me that I would, you know, talk through with stuff, or therapists, you know. But ultimately, acting was great for therapy, you know, like it's a therapy in itself, because you are releasing some of that energy if you're going through those scenes, whether you're crying at home or crying on the set, you're getting it out, or that anger, you're getting it out. That was one of the things that I always would tell people, like, man, this has been a good thing for me, because when I'm dealing with all this stress, I can get to release it through these characters, through this artistic expression. Mm. So, yeah. And Mos Def, I'll say Mos Def is somebody who, acting-wise, that I was able to talk to a little bit about acting, because he's a brilliant actor. He is, he is super dope, man.
Well, speaking of Mos Def, from the music side, you know, you guys... most people will look at it as conscious rap, right?
Yeah.
Talib Kweli, Mos Def, yourself. How has that been? Because sometimes people don't want labels or titles because they feel like it boxes them in and it limits them from doing, like, just being a person. Like, they might want to do something that's not necessarily conscious, right? So how has that title, as far as being a conscious rapper, how has that blended with you?
Well, it's been... you know, I went through a journey with being called a conscious artist, because at first, when they first said it, I was like, man, why are they calling me that? Like, you know, like, why they, you know, like, because it did put me in a box. And I'm like, man, I like women and I like drinking. And automatically, if you put in a conscious box, they expect you to just be like only talking about Asada Shakur or, you know, or the Panthers and Malcolm X, or you always gonna be serious. Mm-hmm. In fact, like being on tour, I would meet girls and that's all they wanted to talk about. I'd be like, look, I like having fun, man. Let's kick it. Let's
stay for a short time.
Like, this ain't gotta stay heavy though. Like, so I think too, to our own fault, we fell into that box and it separated us from other artists like the Jay-Z's or the DMX's. And, you know, we weren't like working with those artists. Mm. And I felt like at a certain point, Kanye was one of the bridges for that, because he did put Freeway and Mos Def on the song, you know, or he was like rapping some things that was like artistic, and his music was very artistic, and he was throwing up the rock sign, throwing up the, you know, and having his Rockefeller chain, you know.
He blended those two worlds.
And it was like a reminder that, man, we not separate. It's still all our culture. It's all us. And like, I have been around Jay-Z and kicked it with him and blah, blah, blah. So why, just because they label me as conscious, do I need to feel like...
well,
because
that's like when he said...
that's what I was going to ask, how validating, or is it a gift and a curse?
When he says, deep down, I want to rap like Common Sense. Right.
Are you saying to yourself, damn, this dude just said he wants to rap like me? Or you're like, he's still putting me in the box a little bit. Yeah. Like, how did you respond to that? That's crazy. We're thinking the same thing.
I love that he said that, because, I mean, at that point, for me to even be in his... thoughts of, while he writing a song, mean that he recognizes me as an artist that is valuable. Mm. And for him to say, as brilliant as Jay-Z is as a businessman, he's also an artist. So for him to say, man, truthfully, I want to rhyme like Common Sense, he's expressing one thing about him. And dope enough, he's like, he expressed what I'd be feeling like, man, why don't we do more of this? Like, we can feel more than one thing about certain situations. He's saying, look, I want to rhyme like this dude and have some conscience, but I want to get paid, yeah, too.
I did $5 million.
Money. Right. I'm doing five. I did $5 million. I'm selling records. Yeah. I'm not. Listen, these dudes, that's cool, but these dudes, and the truth is, we weren't selling like that. Yeah. So that was, you know, his path and his choice.
Yeah.
I felt good that he mentioned me, because, like, at that time, I remember my cousin calling me like, damn, Jay, Hov mentioned you, bro. You made it.
Did you get that from people like that you might not, like you said, like when you saw Big, like, did you get that from people that you was like, yo, I really appreciate it? They might not have said things publicly, but it's like they talk to you and they like, you kind of know like that they do want to tap into that, yeah, but for whatever reason, they're not.
Yeah. I mean, when you get that from the artists that you really appreciate, even some that you like, damn, you appreciate my music, you like my music, damn, that's crazy. Like, you know, you feel good about it, because, man, like, you want to be respected by people you love and your peers and people you fans of. So, and you also understand, like, man, they have this other path and desire and vision and qualities that may get them to a higher level commercial-wise. But, you know, once you start embracing, like, this is who I am, that's when things started to thrive for me. Was like, I wasn't trying to be like Biggie or Nas or De La, even, you know, all of them inspired me, like De La Tribe. Once I found my voice, at first it was like, okay, I'm got all pieces of these. But then I started to be like, okay, I got influences by these, inspiration, but I got my voice now. So, yeah, these artists are these rated artists that can make dope hip hop but still reach high levels of radio play. Mm. And I just accepted that for that, and being like, yo, I'm an artist that's going to do these creative things. I'm going to go out there and do live performances and rock the people. May have a song to get on the radio, may not, mm-hmm, but I guarantee you that I'm going to make some music that you're going to listen to 20, 30 years from now, and hopefully hundreds of years from now.
That's a fact. I think the transparency, even when he says it, it's like, I dubbed down my audience to double my dollar. Y'all all criticize me for it, but y'all holler.
Yeah.
So it's like, what do I do? Yeah. The fact that you're making music that it's standing the test of time, like I said, B is incredible.
Thank you.
That was Five Mics. Love is my favorite track.
Oh, yeah, you like
it? Sometimes I'll just put that on just because the way you're talking about love,
yeah,
and how it manifests in different ways.
Yeah.
But Finding Forever, I think, is equally, almost, it's right there. It's on the cuss.
Yeah.
Southside's on there.
Yeah, Southside.
The People's on there.
Yeah.
Ye is the producer for pretty much both albums, right? And so that's like the traditional model of hip-hop, where you have one producer produce the whole project. And obviously throughout your career, you've changed that. You No ID started at first, yeah, then you had Ye, and now you're back to Pete Rock doing predominantly the entire album.
Yeah.
Talk about that process of going back to traditional ways where you had your one producer and we're gonna make the click this together, as opposed to the Illmatic way,
yeah,
which is a classic.
Classic.
But I'm getting the best five producers that I can find to make this manifesto.
Yeah, well, I'm one of the first to acknowledge that Jay Dilla on B and Find It Forever.
Yes.
Did like he did that Love Is song. And he's one of the greatest producers and that ever live, and also inspired Ye and many others for real. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. Pete Rock, all. Making an album with one producer or two at the most for me has been my way of operating, because like I like creating sounds with an album. The albums that I've loved throughout my years, when they say, what album would you take on an island, blah, blah, blah. Like Off the Wall by Michael Jackson is one of my favorite albums, you know. Lauryn Hill's Miseducation, Mobb Deep, The Infamous, you know, like these are some albums that will be with me forever. That being said, Tribe, Midnight Marauders, like these albums like they created a sound.
Like Purple Tape.
Yeah. Yeah, purple tape.
Throw that in there.
Yes. No, that's up there.
Nah, that's definitely Five Mics.
Yes.
Tribe is the first group to have 3 5 Mic albums.
What?
Midnight Marauders, Low End Theory.
And their first album?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
I never knew that they got 3. They well deserved. And it's like Earth, Wind, and Fire is one of my favorite groups ever, and Tribe is the Earth, Wind, and Fire hip hop to me.
Fact.
Yeah.
Rest in peace to Fife.
Yes, sir. Rest in peace to Fife. And Maurice White from Earth, Wind, and Fire. So I'll say, man, like, I like locking in with a producer because it gives me that, man, we start bonding and creating and talking and going through stuff, and we start developing a rapport, a collaboration, a sound, communication. Like, it's just like, it ain't gonna always be perfect, but it's about getting, like, real creativity is about getting to know each other and then getting into a certain vision and being able to create that vision. And like, iron sharpens iron, y'all get better. And that's what Ye did. No ID did it from the beginning. That's what Questlove as an executive producer and J Dilla did for my album Like Water for Chocolate. And that's what Pete Rock has done. Where with this new album, The Auditorium Volume 1, we wouldn't have created something to me with the level of quality if I wasn't going out to his crib and like him playing records and being, oh, you like that? And like, and then along with that, just watching his dog and go around the house. And then we talking about life and talking about therapy and talking about like, man, when he first started doing this stuff. And like, to me, all that shape up into creating the best work, you know? And you ain't doing it for that reason. You ain't like faking the conversations, but I'm just saying that type of bond. It's like any teams, when we watch sports, some of them teams were just able to reach that level because they was able to connect to as people. That's why Phil Jackson had them handing out books to them and doing like having them sit down and put their thing in the fire and all. Like, those are things that you can't, those are priceless things about connection that come out in any project that you are doing together.
So, like, let's talk about Chicago, because music, I think music, hip-hop has served as, like, a tour guide of a city. When you, like, before I got to L.A., I had an idea of what L.A. was like from listening to Snoop and Dog Pound. And then when I got there, a lot of the stuff that I thought was going to be L.A. wasn't L.A. It was kind of a different perspective, but it's the same thing with Louisiana, Cash Money. Like, you saw, I saw the visuals of New Orleans and the Hot video, and that's what I thought New Orleans was, right? Yeah. So it's like Chicago. I always love going to Chicago because I feel like the downtown is like one of the most beautiful downtowns, right on the water. It's a dope vibe. The food, everybody's like, it's just good energy. But of course, there's issues, but I feel like a lot of it, when once drill became very popular, the image of Chicago changed, right? And so what's your thought process as far as how Chicago is viewed? Because most of the time when you say Chicago, people are like, it's dangerous, stay away, why are you going there? It's just a very negative connotation from at least Black people when they think about Chicago. And then drill music has definitely played a part in that, for sure. And drill has went over the world. London, New York, everybody's doing drill now. So what's your thoughts on Chicago's reputation as far as violence linked with drill music?
Well, I think drill music wouldn't have been able to come about if Chicago didn't have that type of angst and type of like, if parts of Chicago didn't have the violence that we have. That was the expression of what Dirk, what Reese, what Chief Keef, man, they was, them dudes is from a really tough neighborhood one of the toughest neighborhoods in the world. And they was talking what they've been exposed to and what they know. And it's really powerful how, like, we as Black people, and I say Black and brown people really, but how we take some of the heaviest things, the most difficult situations, and make something golden out of it. Because drill is it created a sound.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like influenced the world. And it's dope. But as you said, that it's other sides to Chicago that I feel like people don't know. And I mean, if you think about it, sometimes people got a tendency to come from the glass half empty mentality anyway. Like, oh, you hear that story, so it's just like you generalize that's what it is, that's all it is. And I can understand why you would think like, man, if that's what it is, I ain't going to visit that place. But once you touch down or just even open your mind, because there's other artists that express what Chicago is too from early on.
Lupe.
Yeah. Lupe.
Lupe was a version.
Chance.
Chance. You know,
yeah, that's a fact.
No Name.
That's
like,
a fact.
Like,
that's a
fact. They talk about it.
Shout out to Chance.
Side, but like just different artists that talk about Chance showed a whole nother side of Chicago.
That's
true.
That,
true. Vic Mensa.
What'd you say?
Vic Mensa. Vic.
Oh, Vic. Yeah,
Vic. Dope.
Like, yeah, Vic.
But why is Chicago? Because there's a lot of cities that poverty is pretty much in every city, unfortunately, right? What makes Chicago so different as far as the violence? Like, why is the violence so heavy in Chicago as opposed to New York? Or right. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It just seems like Chicago is just really intense.
Yeah.
In that violent aspect.
Well, I think like gang culture, and I know gangs exist everywhere,
mm-hmm.
but for us, like gang culture was part of our parents growing up. Like the gangs was existing in the 60s, right? So that warrior spirit has been like in our DNA. And I'm not saying that it's gangsters everywhere, but that being said, it was organized for a while. And then as you know, certain people got incarcerated and it was not a lot of leaders there to like guide those who were dealing with the gang culture.
And they displaced people when they tore the buildings down.
And they tore the buildings down, displaced people. But it essentially, you know, that warrior gang thing is ingrained in us. And that's part of like one of the elements that I would say is different from most. Because where's poverty, where's lack of jobs, where's lack of like education and kind of overall lack of hope, you're going to get that. Like, you can go to Brooklyn, you can go in certain places in Harlem or Atlanta or, like, where you can go to these neighborhoods in Oakland and you feel that what you feel in Chicago. But I think it's intensified just by the gang culture that has been there for a long time. And, man, I always be thinking, like, one of my whole life missions has been to be a part of the peace in Chicago, like, to really figure out, like, man, because I don't have all the answers, but I do know creating jobs, education, like education from a level, not just only in school, but providing people with ways to get to their dreams and stuff is important. And just like hope, man, like hope is a broad thing, but it's like I grew up, like my neighborhood ain't far from where Dirk and them grew up, my neighborhood, or where G Herbo and Bibby grew up. I grew up around some of the same stuff, but it was the hope that my mother instilled,
mm-hmm.
that I saw for myself, that made me say, okay, I don't want to go too far over there. I might be around this. I might be banging with these cats over here for a second, but man, I ain't really trying to shoot nobody. That's too much for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that ain't what I'm on. So my point is, and that was because I felt like I had some value. And I think, you know, I like to think about the solutions to help our city and cities across the country, to be honest.
That's crazy. As you're saying that, I'm listening to the line that you said, used to game, like,
yeah.
Right? In the shower, we even rooting for a garbage team.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
But so like the picture that you've painted, I mean, it's been pretty consistent. Like you've painted a narrative that's different from the one that's being portrayed.
Yeah.
Whether it was on Your World,
yeah.
or whether it was on the South Side of the Shah, it's a different perspective, but it's a mature perspective, right? As you're growing. You talked about the music. We talked about the acting. Obviously, you're an author as well. Who starts, or are you doing this on your own to say, I need to diversify artistically through music and through the acting, but now the author is something different. Are there other things that you're getting more adept to or being made aware of inside of the world as your finances are starting to increase, you're making more money? Like, is there somebody guiding you through this, or are you just walking in the rooms and you're seeing new opportunities?
No, it's like, one thing I learned if I was gonna make it in this business, and pardon me, I should have said this earlier, another thing that definitely helped me to continue in this business is constructing a great team. And that, for me, I was like, oh man, okay. My manager at the time was one of my best friends, we're still great, like Derek Dudley. He's a smart dude, and he just knows business and knows how to handle and cares about this. But when it came for us to really get into the acting world, I had to get an agent that is in that world, living in that world, right? Mm-hmm. So then when it came to doing voiceovers, I had to get a voiceover agent who was in that world. When it came to doing investments, you got to go get the person that is going to do that. Oh, when it comes to marketing and development, well, if you don't go hire a firm, do you have somebody that will focus on those things, even if it's from a consultant perspective? And it was me understanding that, first of all, I don't know everything. I might have some ideas, but it's other people with great ideas around me. And along with ideas, who are the people that can execute those ideas? And it was about building that team structure. And it continues to grow too, like, because new things come up. Like, I got into producing films and producing plays, and I had to get a structure for that. Like, mm-hmm. because if you don't have somebody working over there in that branch of work, it's not going to get maximized. You know, it's mm-hmm. not going to reach the levels that you want. Even from philanthropic, like my social activist, I have a team that works. Like, so it's not just like, okay, I'm just going to do everything that comes through, or okay, we got these things going and that's it. That focus has to be there every day like any other business, but this is a business that's not for monetary, it's for the people. So it got to be there, and that got to be somebody heading that. Mm-hmm. So that is what, to me, has allowed me to continue in the business too and figure other ways, but also it's not coming all from me, mm-hmm. you know?
From a hip-hop question, we talked about, like, you being categorized as a conscious rapper, mm-hmm. but you also obviously had a legendary battle with Ice Cube. I'm wondering, what's your perspective on seeing what now would be considered a conscious rapper in Kendrick Lamar have a battle with the most popular rapper and win? And now he's actually ascended to the number one position. It's an interesting dynamic, right? Where his music is in the vein of positivity, revolutionary, but he's still dangerous, extremely dangerous, right? Yeah. So, like, do you have like some like pride in seeing that?
Put the flag down.
Shout out to Drake. No disrespect to Drake, but I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Like,
no, you know,
no. Yeah, well, listen. Let me answer those things directly. So, first of all, Kendrick is a masterful artist, like one of the greats before the battle. He he won a Pulitzer Prize for raps. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how great of a writer he is. And each one of his albums have been different, unique, dope, like, you know, and that's what it is, to do one of the greatest in any generation. Drake is one of the most talented songwriter artists to do music, man, like one of the most successful, to be able to make songs like at that level and be making hits over and over, that says something. Because even pop artists that had some big hits, they don't last decades. So Drake is a super talented dude. The battle, I gotta say, I was like, man, initially I was like, wow, this is for real. These dudes is going at it, because Drake was delivering and then Kendrick came, and then Kendrick kept giving them blows, and then he just like did what he had to do, and just, man, he came out the victor. He was the victor, like, just point blank, he won. And if you're asking, is a victory for me? I think it's just a victory for hip hop that battle went down the way it did and had people paying attention to lyrics and hip hop. Like, different generations was paying attention to that. Like, mm-hmm. I had some of my youngins hitting me up, like, yo, you hit a new one. And then people my age hitting me up, like, yo, you hear what Drake just dropped? You heard what Kendrick said? I think it does. I love that Kendrick is within a battle is able to give you like lessons and spiritual things. Like, I'm like, damn, that is crazy.
But ayahuasca.
But the truth is, yeah, it's like this dude dropping like knowledge and still battling. It's like ridiculous. But that being said, it's funny you said like he's a revolutionary and still dangerous, because when we think about it, our revolutionaries were dangerous. Like Fred Hampton.
Chicago.
He was dangerous. Like, but dangerous for the right thing.
Right.
Shoot, Malcolm X, dangerous. Assata Shakur, dangerous in a way that they are dangerous for their people. And at the end of the day, Kendrick is dangerous for his people. So I got nothing but
you gotta protect them.
Love for them.
Protect our people. How much did it make people go back and revisit old battles? Because right, once they say that battle, it's like, oh, that's the greatest battle of all time, and we're living in that moment, and people are like, well, nah, there was this Ether thing that happened, and yeah. It was like, nah, there was like, I see the bitch in you, but yeah. So now it goes back, people get to revisit it. How much of it was brought back, like a little bit of nostalgia for you, like, yo, we were in that moment, we've grown past it, but like, yeah. I remember that fire that
yeah,
I had.
Yeah. I mean, it was more like people was bringing up the battle I had with Cube and the battle I had with Drake.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
They brought that up. They would bring that up. But I was like, listen, first of all, we both those battles got squashed. So I appreciate that y'all loved it. We had the battle. I was worn at that time. But, you know, I'm just watching the battle now. So don't drag me in it. Somebody was like, yo, I was like, no, don't drag me in. I'm good, man. Let me watch this and just enjoy it, because they both going at it. And I think it was... I would have to say, man, it probably was the greatest battle we've seen. But and even if you feel something else was back in the time, it's still one of the greatest. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's like
it's right there.
It's because that back and forth, you didn't have that much back and forth, like right direct, and have all the artwork to go with it. And it was levels to their battle.
Well thought out, like videos were shot.
Yeah.
They was doing 10 minutes later, he dropped the joint.
Stepping like, on each other's tracks.
That was definitely crazy.
And now we got the Super Bowl.
That's a fact.
I mean,
we'll anticipate.
On some hip hop, like, not who's the best artist, but like, who do you think are the most, like, who's some of the most dangerous rappers that, because I heard Nas when he was saying, like, he used to fear Big L. Mm-hmm. So, like, Big L never really reached the level of success that people, you know, he's not on nobody's, like, top five, but, like, as far as a rapper, he's highly respected.
Right.
So, like, who's some of the people on your list that, like, you just, like, nah, these dudes is just different with the pen?
Andre 3000, Nas, Kendrick, some of my older guys I grew up with, like Big Daddy Kane and KRS-One, Rakim. Let me see who else. Those are some of the ones. Saha
the Prince.
The Prince. He one of them guys, when you hear him dropping bars, you like, wow, this dude can say some stuff. But as far as the ones I just said, Kendrick and Andre 3000 are two of the, like, ones when I hear, I'll be like, oh, Nas for me is like that.
Yeah. Shout out to Esco.
Yeah.
We always do a Mount Rushmore of a city. Shout out to Mount Rushmore.
Okay, if I'm going to take myself.
No. You got to be.
I'll take myself. Okay.
I'm putting you on it now. There's three other slots.
Okay, I'm going to put it in. Okay, so it's four people. It's me, Kanye. I'm gonna put Twista and probably Dirk.
I was gonna say Dirk.
Yeah. Damn.
Dirk.
They're gonna be like, where's Sosa?
Yeah. Shout out to Sosa. Yeah. But Dirk's, I think, has been more consistent. Dirk has been like...
He revolutionized that at 16. Like
Sosa?
That sound comes in after him.
He did, but then Dirk took that...
Yeah. And he ran it. He ran with it.
Yeah.
He's carried it for almost 10 years now.
That's true.
Yeah, he been consistently...
No, he's the guy. Yeah. We're not going to deny that. We're not going to deny that. Yeah. That's a good Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, I mean... I know Chance is like, yo, but
we're about to get a text message after this.
Yeah, I forgot Lupe too, but anyway, I gave my
Food and Liquor. Is another classic.
So what can people expect from this project with you and Pete Rock? Is it nostalgic to the 90s? Is it new? Like what can they expect to hear when they
get this? I think it has both those things you just mentioned, because it has the spirit of what we love in the 90s, like just the spirit of the music. Mm-hmm. But the sound is new. Like, it don't sound like, okay, all these drums is old. Like, Pete could have made the beats back in 90, mm-hmm. in the 90s. It's got the textures and the sound and the quality and approach that is present day. It don't sound like something he's done or anything like I've done. And I'm rapping about what a grown man would rap about right now.
Well, that's the interesting
thing
too.
Thank you.
That's the good thing, because that's one thing I liked about Nas's journey is that he, like, Life Is Good is one of my favorite albums. Like, he's talking about his divorce. It's things that you, it's like you said, in Jay-Z 444.
Yeah.
What I don't like is when some of our hip-hop artists, they're still rapping about, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, yo, you're a grandfather.
Right, bro,
you're not in a club. You're not a strip club. Like, you know what I'm saying?
You've been wealthier longer than you've been poor.
No, I just feel like that's what I don't like to see is like age appropriate rap, I
Please.
Think is
man. Hey, if we listen to you when we were teenagers and now we're grown, you're grown too.
Because you got a
you're grown too.
Because you have an audience that is listening for that reason. Like, if you 40 or you 50, you don't want to listen to what a 20-year-old, like, the 20-year-olds make music for the 20-year-olds. But like,
you know, exactly. And if some of those songs end up, like, hitting, if a 20-year-old song end up hitting other age groups, that's great. Or, you know, but I don't believe, and even when I made I Used to Love Her, I was talking about, like, just, man, being authentic to who you are and where you are, and, like, not chasing what everybody else is doing. And I think when you see older artists trying to sound young or just getting all the young artists so they can be cool, it just don't feel as good.
Yeah.
It don't feel authentic. So, and I love that, man, we can talk about, like you said, Nas on Life Is Good. We talk about divorce or, you know, shoot, I mean, you've heard artists talk about therapy or like, these are things that, man, as we grow, we talk about these things. And I think one thing we forget, and you said it a little bit, Troy, is like, man, we growing up, like the audience growing up. So we don't want to hear you talk about something we used to do when we was 20 years old either. We'd rather hear you talk about something grown and just say it in a fresh way.
Yeah. My kids are graduating from high school. Like, yo, these things are happening, bro.
These things happening, bro.
I'm buying a house right now, man.
Bro, dope, man. And people that's dope, like Andre 3000, like, he be making stuff sound good. He could be. I remember he did a rap about being in the line in Whole Foods.
That was fire.
That joint was amazing.
Yeah. It's like brunch on Sundays.
Yeah.
We actually go to brunch on Sundays. Thanks, Nas.
Yeah, exactly. That's so I love that approach. And that's what this album. Yeah. This album is when I had Questlove from the Roots Sequence, the album, the P Rock and I album. And when he heard it, he was like, first he was like, man, this is one of your best albums, man. It's in your top. I was like, really? And he's like, yeah. And he said, this is what an album should be from somebody that's an adult in hip hop. This is what it should sound.
Adult contemporary.
Yeah. 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 Adult tradition. Somebody was asking me, how should it be categorized? Like, what do you think is a good category? I'm like,
hip hop.
This adult contemporary, hip hop, traditional hip hop. But yeah.
When you was 20, you rapped like you was 20.
Yeah.
You fit rap like that, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Point blank.
Shout out to you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate it.
We appreciate you, my guy.
Man,
thank you.
I'm glad I got to tell you in person how much I loved being. That meant a lot. 20 years next year.
Yeah.
Can we get one show? Just the album?
Yeah.
I was gonna ask you, are you going on tour?
Yeah, we're definitely gonna have to do a B like 20 year celebration.
I'm there. I'm just telling you that. I might be at multiple shows.
Like, come on, man.
And if you need me to do a few verses,
you ready?
You know, like I'll do it verbatim.
You ready? Okay.
Straight up.
Are you going to hit the road for the new album?
Oh, yeah. We're on tour right now, actually. Okay. The Auditorium Volume 1 tour. We doing, now we ending it off in New York. Got some shows at the Blue Note that sold out, but now we're doing Webster Hall.
Fire.
Which is dope. So, man, I'm excited. The tour has been amazing.
I can't wait. Dope, I
man.
Can't wait.
Yeah, thank you. Like Troy said, man, somebody that we listened to for a long time. Man.
Yeah, thanks.
Never compromised the art. That's important. So, yeah. I think that's something that, you know, the legacy is going to live forever. And definitely classic, timeless music. So, thanks for all of the inspiration.
Give thanks, y'all. Yeah. Thanks. It's been great to be here.
It's beautiful, man. Thank you.
All right, guys. Thank you for rocking us. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Peace.
When you're with Amex Business Platinum, you have the card that helps you do more of what you love. Like a flexible spending limit that adapts with your business. And with 5x membership rewards points on flights and prepaid hotels booked on AmexTravel.com, going the extra mile for your business is even more rewarding. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Not all purchases will be approved. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/AmexBusiness.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit 2, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.